This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
All right, our next guest, we go literally right down the street, and neighbor of Dallin Cuffs, Jordan Cornette, joins us. Jordan, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood here, Pack.
By the way,
hopefully you're not going to start singing. Don't start singing, my man, or you get a good
I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that.
I want to ask about the neighbors first before we get into hoops. Everything good? I mean, you know, last time we had you on, we had terrible snow, and you mentioned you're getting no love from Cuff because he had his driveway professionally shoveled and cleared while you were out there having to do a little elbow grease to get that thing knocked out. We good? Everything melted up there?
What I've learned is Dallin's a loyal friend. Elite communication is paramount. If you don't communicate properly, things get lost through the cracks, fall through the cracks, and I end up with with myself shoveling out there, getting a high-level workout in because I didn't communicate properly with my neighbor who was buttoned up, had the guy coming to take care of business. So you learn along the way. But like I said, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. We bounce back. Just like, you know, teams who've struggled in the regular season, like a Syracuse, we figure it out in the postseason.
There you go.
Hold on. Real quick, though, in all honesty, my wife handled that entire thing. So, JC, yeah, the communication wasn't from her getting things done to me just telling you simply what was going on. So I messed that up. More importantly, though, our issue is, and JC, you gotta be keeping 100 with the folks here. Our driveway is just way unnecessarily long. It's unnecessarily long and it's stupid. Yeah. It's like the first thing we first bought the house, I'm like, how am I going to shovel this thing? Well, turns out I'm not. So there's a little discrepancy there in terms of the effort that has the elbow grease, if you will, that has to go into this thing.
Hide the money. There's poor people around. Hey, that's a flex. He's got a long driveway, big house. He's doing well. Hey,
what's
Pat,
that gonna,
I just want to grow up to be like DC.
I could live in a shack with a long driveway. It's just the driveway's the problem.
You know, when you got 3 acres, when you got 3 acres before you get to the front door, these are the problems you have. Right, Dallin?
Right? Seriously.
Thank you, guys. Yeah.
Seriously, it's different. Yes, the neighborhood, you cross over one street, it gets wildly different where the Cornettes live. So we're just struggling to make it through. Dallin and the upper crust on the other side with their long driveways, it's a different life.
Speaking of going to a different neighborhood, let's talk about the Sweet 16. We now do go to a different neighborhood. But the ACC with two teams, it didn't look great after that first round, 2-5, Jordan. But you know what? Syracuse and Florida State have earned their way to this spot. And now I think they both have a chance this weekend.
Yeah, they got a chance. The matchup, I think, is more favorable, honestly, for Florida State versus Michigan than it necessarily is for Syracuse versus Houston. But it's been fun to see Syracuse play at the level that they've always had the potential of doing. And, of course, it's leading offensively. The shot-making of Buddy Boeheim, who his numbers, if you look at him throughout the season, despite all the shots he's made from three, he struggled percentage-wise. He has taken over. I mean, that's what this tournament's about. I believe Dallin said it earlier on in the show. Kemba Walker-esque runs propel teams to do something special. Can Buddy Boeheim go all the way to a national championship? Who knows? I'm not here to say no at this point, but what I am here to say is that he's propelled this team to a second weekend with some competent play from guys like Joe Girard, you know, a great balance through this team. Marek Dolezal is the most underrated player in the ACC. I really felt like that all season long because I knew he wasn't going to get the accolades, but I know that offense goes through him. He's got such a unique build and skill set to kind of align things for that team, and he's been incredibly productive, just stuffing the stat sheet. For Florida State, I think it's a favorable matchup because there's nothing in their game so far that has exposed them to say, it's going to be a tough matchup versus Michigan. It's going to be a tough matchup because Michigan's good. But if Florida State's defending like that, if they're competing the way that they've been competing defensively, they could take away the shot-making ability. And they have the length for guys like Wagner who have thrived to not be as impactful as they have been. We're quickly going back to Syracuse versus Houston. You give up 19 offensive rebounds to West Virginia. What do you think Houston's going to do on the offensive glass? So that's something they need to shore up.
Yeah, you mentioned Dolezal. Those guys, the bigs have to, and the guards, everybody's got a gang rebound in that game for the Cuse, no doubt. Yeah. I want to come back to the court in a second. First, you were in the bubble. You were there calling games for Westwood 1. What is that experience like? And then what's it going to look like for guys you know, for this week, where usually you're back at home, you know, back in classes, back normalizing. Instead, you're staying in Indy. Give us a sense of what it's like in that bubble and what it will be like for these guys in between games.
Well, DC, you know, there was some energy in the stands. The energy was generated from an intimacy of the fans that were there. It was family and friends. A lot of, in that first tier bowl, they were the only ones who had access, because the first tier was for personnel who'd had direct contact with the players, that being family and friends. And so that part of it, I think, added a little bit of juice to these teams, because some of these players hadn't seen their parents, certainly hadn't played in front of them. So that was a little bit of a driving force. The general pop was up in the upper bowl, and there were fans there. So I do think that had some of that tournament energy, because, as you guys know, these tournament sites, sometimes it's not like there's a ton of fans in first-round venues, even pre-COVID. So I don't think they were deprived much of that part. I think it was pageantry, you know, having your band as you walk into the lobbies, your cheerleaders, all the fans lining there, high-fiving as you get ready to get on your bus and have your escort take you to the venue. That wasn't a part of this thing. But in terms of performance and in talking with all the coaches, it was the same thing when we talked to them pregame. I don't know what I'm going to get from my team. They've been holed up on this floor. We were in West Lafayette, mind you. The teams are down in Indianapolis, so they're getting on an hour bus to go practice, come back, then go play a game. And I think you saw some of the rust. So when teams figured it out and were lucky enough to win their first game, they looked markedly better in their second game because they found a little bit of a flow. Now they're there. I expect it to be elevated play from the get-go in the Sweet 16 matchups come this weekend.
Jordan, we've asked a question to the viewers and listeners regarding the matchups this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Does the ACC win two? Do they lose two? Or is there a split? We know what BPI thinks. Major dogs in both of them. That's probably great news for the ACC. But what do you think happens here? How would you guess that? Sweep, swept, or split?
You haven't looked at my bracket, right?
Well, wait a minute. Wait, before you
guys haven't seen my bracket.
Wait. Before you answer, here's what mine looks like, and the darks are not good. So I mean, you can't embarrass yourself with a bad bracket. I own it.
If this were my bracket, I'd do the Dikembe Mutombo in a commercial. No. Like, mine is so bad. But as I try to, like, I kind of look at this as teams going into the NCAA tournament, right? Like, put in the rear view what you've done to this point. Take a look at a new bracket with a Sweet 16 set up, and then try to recalibrate and make some more picks. So as I look at it, I love Florida State versus Michigan, to be honest. I had a chance to do Michigan in their first round game. It was versus 16 seed. Really hard way to kind of speculate what they can do moving forward. But seeing what they have and what they were without is still pretty obvious. And I don't know what Isaiah Livers is going to look like for the future, if he's going to be in uniform this weekend. But that could ruin rhythm. And so to me, with how Florida State's guarding, the fact that they play 10, 11 guys, the fact that they can switch everything, match up personnel-wise with Michigan, sure, Florida State's been turning it over a little bit. Michigan doesn't really turn you over. Looking at Florida State and the ability for 10 guys, well, one of them is going to step up and play a big game, and we can ride him. MJ Walker's been slow, but Polite gave you 22. The numbers are just in your favor for somebody to step up and play big-time basketball when you play that many guys. So I like Florida State. And give me Syracuse. Give me Syracuse. Like, if Buddy Boeheim's going to do this, the one thing I've learned in the games I've called in the bubble during the tournament so far, stars can put teams on their back and truly lead them to wins. And Buddy Boeheim, the story feels right, how he's been able to play. Now, it's going to be different with Houston because they're going to apply a different kind of pressure. But Buddy can slow that down with how he backs you up. Sometimes there can be missed assignments. It's probably going to play fast. Syracuse has enough balance offensively to make some shots. Houston's not good from the perimeter. It's going to come down to how rugged in the interior are the Orange going to be. Are they going to keep Houston off the backboard? If it becomes volleyball and Syracuse doesn't take care of the basketball, it's over for them. But they've risen to the occasion, and I think they're going to be better on the backboard. I think they're going to make enough shots in this game to apply pressure on Houston, who doesn't shoot the three. I like both. Give me both teams. I like Syracuse, and I like Florida State. Let's go.
Let's go. I think it'll be really interesting to see how Houston guards Buddy. To your point, I feel like you've just got to face guard him and try to take him out of the game because he's been that good. If he touches the ball, you could be in trouble. So I want to see if they make that adjustment from the jump and just say, you're not beating us, somebody else has to. which the Orange have dudes. Somebody else could beat him. I asked this to Adrian Crawford, the Florida State basketball radio analyst. You just brought it up, how Florida State likes to switch everything. I want to get your perspective as a big guy. If and when Florida State does switch everything, you end up with mismatches and Hunter Dickinson. How did you approach that? Were you a guy that went to the block and demanded the ball? I know you were different. You're not Dickinson. I know you're going to self-deprecate. But as a big, what would you want to see them do? And what does that do to the offense when that happens?
Hey, Dal, you nailed it. I was going to be self-deprecating. I won't do that. But where you really nailed it is Hunter Dickinson should be just salivating, licking his chops. He should be thinking, okay, you guys want to switch everything. I don't think you have a matchup right away outside of Koprivica that can stand there with me. If you guys want to switch, anybody that's not named Koprivica for Florida State, come on and get some. Let's bring these mice into the house. Dallin and Pack, you know what I mean. Mouse in a house basketball, a distinct advantage down low where it benefits the bigger player. So Hunter Dickinson should have a massive day in this game. But it's going to be, is there enough opportunity to pass over the length? Because, mind you, guys like Mike Smith and Eli Brooks, they ain't the biggest guys. So, yeah, Franz can make those plays over the top to get it down low to Dickinson. But can the rest of that perimeter that leans smallish against the length, it's all about those perimeter guys, Dallin, and I know you didn't love to do this. It's about definitely giving it up down low to that big so he can shine. That's the issue.
Jordan, last time you were on the
show. I like to give it into you. I just want the ball. I just want the kick back out. I want you to get doubled. Yeah. I want it right back. That's how that works.
Two-way street. There's no post-repost.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. One-way street.
No shot.
It's kind of like your neighborhood. It's a one-way street, right? That's it. One way doesn't go both ways.
There you go.
Exactly.
Jordan, the last time you were on the show, you gave an impassioned speech from the heart regarding Notre Dame students and Mike Bray. Since we've last had you on, Mr. Bray has made it perfectly clear he expects to be back next year. Now, he just celebrated a birthday yesterday. Your take on that whole thing with Notre Dame, especially the way after you spoke, they knocked off this Florida State team we were talking about in dramatic fashion and knocked the Noles off the top line in the ACC. But your take on Mike Bray now as we move forward to the next season.
That it was much ado about nothing. A bunch of loud kids who may have been overserved before they entered the arena and embarrassed themselves were much ado about nothing, because anybody who knows what's really going on at Notre Dame knows that Mike Bray is going to be in a position to leave when he wants to leave because he's earned that right. But it's also a trust between the athletic director and Jack Swarbrick and Coach Mike Bray, that Coach Bray knows how to read a room and he's not tone deaf. And he knows if he can no longer do the job, he ain't a guy that you're going to have to force out the door. He's going to leave on his own accord. And he's probably going to be in front of one of these microphones, being one of the best analysts, or he might go coach somewhere else, or he might ride into the sunset. But he's earned the right for one more crack at it next season, because that entire nucleus of juniors who have underachieved but have a fire lit underneath them are going to be seniors. And you're bringing in the Ivy League player of the year coming over from Yale, Paul Atkinson. That's my Ivy League shout out for the show here, my appearance. Who's going to be a difference maker down low? Yeah, he's going to be a difference maker down low. They got two top 100 kids from the South Bend area that are joining that team next year that have developed a relationship with coach. He's going to take a swing next year. I expect it to be a home run. And from there, Coach Bray will decide what he wants to do. But there is no shot. There's never been a shot that Coach Bray wasn't going to be the guy next year, because it's prime for him to do what he does best, win. Last time I checked, he's the winningest coach in Notre Dame basketball history. So to those kids who shouted those things, whatever you're studying at Notre Dame, maybe make history a part of your studies and learn a little bit more.
By the way, speaking of history, we just made history, the fourth separate Ivy League reference on a Packer and Durham show. This is show number 347.
We're elevating the show.
Never.
We got 45 minutes. I'm going to set a record. I'm going to set a record we're never going to beat.
That would be
You know what?
True. Brought to you by Dish. That would be true.
Speaking of records we're never going to beat, I think this is the first time I popped on a show without any reference to the shot block record. DC, you're my hype guy. What are we doing here?
You stole my thunder. I was going to send you off with that. Now you took it and you used it. I was going to say the Notre Dame all-time leading shot blocker. If they don't know that history, they don't know nothing. There you go.
There it is.
That's my guy.
That's it. That's your neighbor.
That's my neighbor. That's my neighbor.
Listen,
it's my neighbor.
Enjoy the madness, my man. Appreciate the time as always.
Let's go.
See ya.
You guys are the best, man. Fun listening. Keep on rocking. Hey, Wes, I know you're watching because you watch everything. Hope you're feeling better, buddy. We love you. We miss you. Look forward to seeing you back soon.
There you go. Jordan Cornette. By the way, Buddy Boeheim coming up here in about 10 minutes or so. And we'll talk about Buddy and Jim and the Syracuse family coming up in the next segment. Again, number for the show is 844-SAY-ACCN if you want to jump on board on some of our topics that we kicked out there for you guys to have some fun with. Come right back to you. Dallin Cuff filling in for Wes, who hopefully will be back soon. I'm Mark Packer. You got us on ACC Network, and you're listening to us as well on SiriusXM Channel 371.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
ACC Network, Packer and Durham. Dallin Cuff filling in for Wes. Buddy Boeheim, he was on with us last week. Good mojo. He's lighting it up, having an awesome run. He's going to join us coming up here in about 10 minutes or so. Buddy's dad, Jim, by the way, was on with Mike Greenberg on ESPN Radio yesterday, and he talked about the mindset it is when you coach your son. Here's what he had to say.
During the game, I just pretend he's a player. I try to pretend he's my two guard, and let's see what, you know, what we can do. We obviously get him more shots now because he's making more. You know, this year he started out shooting 25% from the three the first 15 games. And, you know, a lot of people didn't like him in the lineup, in especially in Syracuse. But, you know, he stuck with it. I mean, he's the hardest worker I've ever been around, and I've had some really hard workers. And, you know, I'm just proud that he made himself into that. Not that he's necessarily a great player, which I think he's becoming, but I'm just so proud that he's made himself into this because he just wanted it. I mean, I never told him to go to the gym. If anything, his mother's probably the only one that's told him to go to the gym, but usually she tells him to come out of the gym because he's there Saturday night after an afternoon game shooting the ball on a machine, a gun machine, which you get a shot every 8 seconds, for an hour and a half. I mean, it's his arm gets sore, literally. He has to rest his arm this year, which I've never heard from a basketball player. And I've been around some guys like Klay Thompson and Steph Curry who shoot hundreds and hundreds of shots every day. But I just am proud that he's made himself into this. And that's what I take out of it as a father.
Don, it's such a cool story, right? I mean, Jim Boeheim, legendary coach, needless to say, 20 Sweet 16s, national championship, et cetera, et cetera. And here's his son, who really has worked himself, as Coach just mentioned, worked himself into being a really, really good college player.
100%. And, I mean, he was a great shooter last year. Now he's a great scorer, and that really is the difference. When he's scoring at all three levels, he's able to get into the lane, put his shoulder into somebody, and finish over them, finish around them. Plays great out of closeouts, obviously, because you have to close out on his three-point shot. And the work that he's put in is pretty – it's fun to see people put in so much and get the rewards out of it and reap the benefits from it. And obviously, with COVID hitting him early this year, there clearly was something wrong, and you're not sure what to believe because, obviously – Coach Boeheim saying that, you know, he's sick and he's not quite there, but you wonder, is that the contributing factor? Is there other things? You may not know. And then you see as he gets to full health what he's fully capable of. And as his other teammates continue to develop and they get better and play that zone better with more aggression and more confidence and more communication, they're better on the defensive end and they're better on the offensive end. They're a complete different team than they were 6 weeks ago than they are right now.
And we've also talked about this tournament has given us moments where an individual gets so hot that you just go, hey, clear out, let's go. And we're going to ride this wave as long as we can. And you kind of get a feeling with Syracuse, and it's not just this tournament. I think it kind of started the week leading prior to the ACC tournament when they knocked off both North Carolina and Clemson. They had to win those games. They rolled into Greensboro. They had to beat NC State in that 8-9 matchup, and they dominated them. And they had Virginia in all kinds of trouble, before the Hoos knocked him off at the last second. This has kind of been a build-up for Syracuse. And the fact that Buddy Boeheim has just been lights out, it's kind of the perfect mix and why Syracuse, I think, is dangerous against Houston coming up on Saturday.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I think that, yeah, it's not like they're overwhelming teams and just dominating down the stretch of the whole season. They were getting better, making themselves competitive, and winning the games they had to win. They obviously had to beat North Carolina at home. They did that. They had to beat NC State, as you mentioned. They have performed in the games where they had to win, and then when you literally are in a win-and-go-home situation now here in March, they've done well in those games. They did enough in the ACC tournament after losing to Virginia, but when they stepped out of league, and it is true, when you don't see the zone, you're not used to it. This zone, I've said multiple times, it's not the same as the zones it used to, the zones of 7 or 8 years ago when they had pros and 6'7" Wesley Johnson out there with this crazy arm, crazy wingspan, and Tish out there, Trish out there, and other guys. There were just huge problems. And pros, this is a different team. This is a really good team, but maybe not an NBA-laden team, but a team that has improved through the course of the year. And is playing the zone better now and have been more difficult to break down. And when you don't see it, you just look at that San Diego State tape, folks. Like, you know where you're supposed to get the ball. You know how to get in that high post. You know they're going to trap you in the short corner, but you haven't seen the trap there before. That's not common. Their wings are much higher than normal in a 2-3 zone. You're not used to seeing it. And then you're on your heels. When you're on your heels, you're being reactive, not proactive. You're not playing with confidence. And sometimes it takes time to build into the game. WVU, it took them the first 10 minutes. Just to start to figure out, all right, we can get it in the high post, but when Derek Culver gets it there, he's a true big and he's not really successful there, so maybe we got to tweak somebody else and put somebody else in there. It takes you time to build into it once you see it. So that is the difference when you step out of league play. When you play in the ACC, teams literally start the game knowing exactly how they want to attack it, how they did before in this season, how they've done it before in seasons past, the personnel that worked, they know it, they have it all lined up. That makes it easier to break down. When you don't have those things, especially on those short turnarounds, it's tough to overcome.
In the same interview with Greeny, Coach Boeheim also talked why the circumstances of coaching your son can be a little challenging.
It's the hardest thing I've ever done. It's the best thing I've ever done, but it's the hardest thing because you can't think about he's my son. You have to think about he's my two guard. What do we do with him? Is he got to come out of the game because he misses 4 or 5 straight shots. Fortunately for him, when I've had shooters, it doesn't matter if they miss shots, they stay in. Because shooters are going to make shots if they get enough of them. The only problem is if the coach doesn't get them enough shots. And if I don't get them enough shots, I can't go home at night. So, the door's locked. And, if it's really bad, the door's locks, they may have been changed by the time I get home. So as we all report to someone, even head coaches, mm-hmm. and radio guys, we report to the boss at home.
That would be 100% accurate.
That's true.
True. That is true. Brought to you by Dish in all caps is what that is. That statement right there. But the whole father-son combination thing, we've seen some great combos in the ACC and in the NCAA. But this is a feel-good right here. There's no question about it. Watching the Boeheims go to work, and we'll get a chance to see it at least one more time. And that'll be coming up Saturday when Syracuse takes on the number 2 seed, which is Houston. And speaking of half of the duo, Buddy Boeheim is scheduled to join us coming up next, and we look forward to that. We'll take phone calls, too, before we get out of here at 10 a.m. You got the number at 844-SAY-ACCN. That's 844-SAY-ACCN. But looking forward to having Buddy back. He joined us from Indianapolis last week. Said, man, I'm going to take those Greensboro rims with me. I think he was right. But you'll hear again from Buddy Boeheim next right here on ACC Network. You're watching and listening to Packer and Durham with Dallin Cuff filling in for Wes. Come right back to you.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. The Packer and Durham Podcast.
He's gotten better. He believes in himself now 100%. And it's taken a while to get to that point. When he was in ninth grade on his AAU team, he didn't start. And the guys ahead of him weren't very good. But I told him, I said, you're going to be good. You're going to be better than these guys someday. And fortunately, he not only listened to me, but he went to work and made it happen. And that's why I'm proud of him. It's not that he's good. Jimmy's good, too. But they both work. They just work hard at the game. I admire both my sons. But I really admire both my daughters because they're hard workers. And Sissy tells everybody she's got 3 state championships and they don't have any. So she's not even a little bit, giving a little bit to her brothers.
Man, there's nothing better than family smack talk, right? There's nothing better what stays between these walls. With that said, Buddy Boeheim joins us. So, Buddy, really, the sister is talking trash with the state championships and nobody can say a word, right?
Yeah, she's got it in that category. I remember them in high school. They had a great team. They were fun to watch. She's definitely was the most talented Boeheim, I thought. She just naturally was gifted, had the talent, was a good athlete. And, you know, me and Jimmy kind of worked a little more for it. She was more of a social person. She didn't love working, being in the gym. And she's got some stuff to back it up, though. So it's a competitive family, and we get at it in just about anything. If it's a board game, any type of game, there's going to be an argument or a fight.
I feel you on that. I'm one of 5 siblings, so that stuff can be fun. But you just heard your dad there saying how proud he was of you. I think people keep asking him what it's like to coach his son, but when you hear your dad be effusive in the praise for you and how you've made yourself a new player, what goes through your head?
It means everything, mainly because he was the first person to believe in me before I even believed in myself. I mean, coming up, I felt like I had to be some amazing player because my dad was a Hall of Fame coach. Everyone expected me to be some great player, and I just felt like I wasn't there yet. I wasn't the player I wanted to be, and he was there the whole way telling me, just keep working hard. You're going to be fine. You're going to be a good player one day, and that's all I needed to hear from him. That's my biggest motivator, my role model, and someone I look up to ever since I was a kid. So hearing that means everything to me because I just want to come here and help Syracuse in any way possible. I didn't know what it would be, if I would just be a role player or a bench player, but any way I was here, I wanted to help him win and just make him proud, and that's means a lot to me. It's my biggest goal is to make everyone proud that supported me and been there for me through it all.
That's well said. Before we look forward to Houston, I want to look back a second to West Virginia. You guys got off to a great start, and you knew West Virginia would make a run. But when they finally took the lead in the second half, it was almost like, all right, we got a taste of our own blood. How are we going to respond? And that, to me, was the most impressive thing about that game. That West Virginia caught you, they passed you, they knocked you down, and you guys responded by going on a great run and jumping that lead back out to 11. That to me, well, it signified that, you know what, this Syracuse team is ready to go and make a deep run.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in the first half, I struggled shooting the ball. Gio really kept us in it on offense, and our defense was great. We held them to 26 points or so, and 28, 29 maybe. But coming in the second half, we said they were going to score, they were going to make shots. They're too good of a team to not make adjustments, too good of a coach. And they came out, and we were scoring early. We made some shots, and then we kind of went through a drought for about 4 minutes, and a 13-point lead went to down 1. McNeil got going. He hit 3 4 threes in a row. And there were about 8 minutes left, and we didn't panic. And credit to having a tough schedule in the ACC, playing in close games. Virginia game really helped us for this because that was a back-and-forth game, too, and we were there the whole way. And this was a similar story. We just kept playing. We knew that if we scored and got stops, that it would be tough to beat us. And everyone contributed. Marek made some great plays down the stretch. Rob Braswell had a big 3. Kadari made some big plays. It was Quincy Gurrier had a big dunk. Everyone stepped up. We rebounded. We got out on shooters better. And just a great sign for us as a team that we're going to be a tough out no matter who you are, and we're going to fight to the end.
No doubt about it. I said before the West Virginia game, I thought maybe they should just face guard you and X you and try to just stop you from touching the ball, because how you've developed as a player, not just a shooter, you're scoring off the bounce, you're scoring in the mid-range. Like, if you touch the ball right now, that can be problematic for a defense. Are you at all surprised somebody, they haven't tried to just completely take you out of it? Because it seems like the only recourse right now.
I was definitely surprised last game, because last game I got the cleanest looks I've had in probably a month. The first half, I missed five shots that were like wide open. I was like, man, I'm like wide open. I kind of thought about it a little, but I was definitely a little surprised. And then after the game, Coach Huggins said they switched a couple times, and I had McNeil on me in the end of the last stretch of the second half. And when I got him on me, I knew he was a little shorter than me. I could shoot over him. So that was big, because they had Matthews on me, who's 6'8", and they go to 6'2" guys. So that was big for me, knowing that I can get in the lane, get my pull up, and also rise over him if I need to. So I was definitely a little surprised, but I also think that's just a testament to this team. And we got weapons. Joe hit four threes in the first half. Marek's just a playmaking five man that can do anything. And we got some guys that can fill it up. So it's just a lot of fun playing. And I think we've shown that everyone's capable of doing something in this offense.
Now you move to the weekend, and we're going to Hinkle Fieldhouse, legendary Hinkle Fieldhouse. You know, when guys can shoot, they can shoot. But man, it just, every time I've walked in that building, it just feels like a basketball paradise. Like, you know, this is the way it's supposed to be. When you get into one of these zones, buddy, which you're in right now, because you've been on fire for the whole month of March, and you walk into a building like that, it just seems like shooters love shooting in a place like that. So what's the feel for Hinkle yet? Do you know?
Yeah, we played in there against San Diego State. So I walked in there for shooter or practice 2 days before the game, and I was like, man, this is an amazing gym, one of my favorite college gyms I've been to. Just a legendary arena. They redid everything. It looks real nice. And I saw her in the early games. The sun was out a little in the court, so I was just happy we played at night. And once the game in warmups, I was feeling great. I was like, man, I'm feeling really good, and got a couple going early, and just didn't look back. I love that gym. It's definitely a little louder because it's smaller, so our fans were really great, and it's cool having them right above the basket. You can see them, and it was a lot of fun. It was one of the most fun games I've been a part of. Everyone was making shots. It was a really cool game, and to win it in an arena like that was a lot of fun. And I'm looking forward to playing in there again. I'm really happy we're back in there.
Yeah, you won't have to worry about the sunlight at 9:55 p.m. Eastern time for that tip. So you won't have to worry about any glare other than the star that you've become in this tournament. That's the only glare that you're going to have to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice playing at night, but I think the biggest thing is just getting your mindset right for that. You have to rest all day. You have to change your sleep schedule so you're going to bed a little later. Just focus on throughout the day on staying focused and prepared for that, because it's definitely going to be a late game, and you know that you need to jump out early and be awake from the start.
Buddy, I want to get into a little bit of that, you know, just how different this experience is, obviously, in your hotel room now. Can you just take us into what these days will look like from a schedule perspective for you guys? And I know we mentioned off air, but tell for viewers, like, are you able to get extra shots up? How the workouts? Like, take us through what it's like to be preparing for a game in this unique environment.
It's a lot different, but I think that if you make adjustments, and the more focused team will come out stronger always. And that's what we've tried to do. We've emphasized that. We get a practice every day, so we'll go for about an hour and 15, or hour and a half on days like today or tomorrow, and we have more rest ahead of us. And then after that, we'll get about 20, 25 minutes to get our own shots up, own work in. So that's something I've really tried to take advantage of, knowing that I won't get any other gym time than our practice slot. So just going hard with GMAC for 20, 25 minutes, getting a really good sweat in. And then about 2 days this week, we'll get a lift in the weight room. And that's cool. We get about 45 minutes, which is good. I like lifting a lot. So, you know, I could maybe use another day or so, but it's good to get in there, try to take care of my body, keep my body right for the game. And we'll get in two or three times. And then the rest is really just downtime. That's where you have to figure out what you're going to do. I've spent time watching games, San Diego State games, West Virginia games, and going to watch some Houston stuff now, and trying to watch movies, whatever it is, doing homework, just trying to take kill time any way possible, spending time with the guys. We're going to go out on the field today for about an hour and play games, whatever it is, try to have some fun. We haven't been outside in a week since we got here, probably since last Monday. So that's definitely something new. And you just have to, make the most of it. You're at the NCAA tournament in the Sweet 16. And it's been a lot of fun having fans at the games because we didn't have fans at our games all year. So that definitely felt a little normal and felt like a real game. And it was really fun having our fans there.
Buddy, we're talking about all, shooting and gyms and, Hinkle's just a great shooter's gym. And you've already talked about that. But you know what? This game with Houston is not so much making shots. Yeah, you got to do that. But they're going to pound the glass. And I'm sure Coach has already made it perfectly clear. Hey, guess what? They're going to swarm. So this is going to be a different kind of game, isn't it? And I know you're going through the scouting report and you still got days to come. But, hey, it's a number two seed. They're really talented. They're well coached. But, brother, they love to get on the glass. So the mindset is going to have to be on the defensive side. That zone, you guys are all going to have to contribute.
Yeah, they're a tough, tough team. I've watched them a couple times this year and just said, man, they're tough. They get after it. You look at them and you're like, how are they the second best offensive rebound team in the country? Their biggest guy's 6'8", and they just, all of them go after the ball. They don't care if they don't get and give up a fast break here and there. They're going to go for the ball, go for the rebound, and they're just a really good rebound team. They have really good shooters. Quinn Grimes is a great player. Defensively, they're tough. Giroux's really tough on the ball. They get after it, and it's going to be definitely our hardest battle yet. We know it's going to be from the start. It's going to be a different game. It's not going to be clean looks. It's going to be more pressure, more everyone rebounding. But the good thing about that is we have experience. We played Carolina, the best rebounding team, and we definitely in the second game did a really good job on them on the board. So we just have to keep that same focus, and everyone's going to have to contribute on the boards. So that's going to be one of the keys, and we know they're a great team, so we're looking forward to it, but we know it's not an easy task.
No, not at all, but a task you guys will be equal to. As you mentioned, Carolina is the number one team in offensive rebounding percentage, Houston's second, but they present a lot of unique challenges on the defensive end. I am obviously fascinated by the unique situation you're in. So you mentioned two things. You're going to go play on the field. Are we playing like kickball, or what we got going on there, and what movies are we watching to kill some time when you're not watching film?
I'm hoping badminton, kickball. We'll see what they have. I saw some badminton early on, and I was a big fan of that. We actually have a little setup in our house, we got a little badminton net, so we play that every now and then. I'm a big fan of just outdoor games, getting outside, kickball, hopefully. Maybe some baseball if they have gloves. That would be cool. And then for movies, I'm watching all the Marvel movies right now in order. So my brother told me to do that, so I just finished Thor. So I got a ways to go, and it's just something to do to kill time. I'm not sure what else I'd be doing right now. So those are the movies I'm watching, and hopefully the field games are a lot of fun too.
Hey, buddy, my partner.
I'm not a good company guy here, Pac. I don't know how many Disney. It's Disney now with Marvel, but how many Marvel movies are we talking here? There's a lot, right?
There's like 20. If you look up, there's two kind of lists. So this is there's like 23 on this one, 25, and I think I've just finished like the eighth or ninth. So I got a ways to go, but it's really cool when you watch them in order. You see how everything lines up. They do a great job with it. And I just love those movies. The Iron Mans are the best. It's weird because I've watched all the Iron Mans and I haven't watched, a Guardians of the Galaxy yet, which is, it's different. The order's it makes sense, but you watch some movies before you watch the others. So it's cool. It's something to do. And I try to tell my teammates to do it, but none of them listen to me. They aren't into that stuff. So I get it, but it's cool, I guess. I've enjoyed it so far.
Hey, buddy, if the plan is
you got to make it to the Final Four so you can watch them all. You got to make it all the way.
Yeah,
you
gotta pace yourself. I need time. I definitely need time. So that's the motivation.
Yeah, and one more thing, too. My partner, Wes Durham, will be crushed because I think he asked you the last time you were on the show if you ever saw the movie Hoosiers. And you're like, no, I've never seen it. So if Wes is watching this morning, I'm sure he is. He's probably going, what do you mean you didn't see Hoosiers? You got 18 trillion marbles and you missed the Hoosiers. But nevertheless, again, if you're hanging out till April the 4th or 5th or 6th, dude, you got time. You got plenty of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely got to watch it for Wes. And my brother told me to watch it. My family got on me about it. My dad, especially. I've watched all the basketball movies probably besides that. So I'm gonna definitely watch that. And I'm seeing all these Hoosier like quotes and stuff, and I don't get what it is. So that will definitely help me if I watch the movie. So I got to get that done too in my spare time.
Well, congratulations on the Sweet 16, but I know unfinished business, and we wish you nothing but the best. And thanks again for making the time.
Thank you guys. Thanks for having me.
You got it.
Always fun.
Buddy Boeheim, taking care of business, watching movies and making threes and winning games. Life is good in Syracuse.
Yeah, getting buckets.
Buckets.
Getting buckets.
By the way, I'll tell you what else we're going to get you. We're going to get you an awesome, awesome matchup of men's lacrosse because we can do that in this league. How about this? Speaking of the Orange, number 4 and number 2 getting after each other. Syracuse and Duke. We've got it for you right here on ACC Network and the ESPN app. It's coming up Thursday. It's one of the very best rivalries in all lacrosse. 6 of the last 10 games decided by a single goal and 3 going in overtime. Coverage starts 7 Eastern. Number 4, Syracuse, and number 2, Duke. Men's and women's lacrosse in this league out of sight. When we come back, the final segment of the show, and it's going to be a quick one. Big day, March 23rd. We'll tell you why. We're going deep, deep, deep black and white photos. And all that's coming up next right here on ACC Network. It's Packer and Durham with Dallin Cuff filled in for Wes. Come right back to you.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. Today, Packer and Dallin. Hopefully we get Wes back here soon, one of these days. He's been under the weather. He appreciates the well wishes. Dallin, you did an outstanding job today. Outstanding job.
Thank
no
you,
surprise.
Thank you.
Four Ivy League appreciate references. The over and under was at 2, so you blew that out of the water, which is excellent. But today correct is...
And actually, you mentioning it right there might have been another one. So maybe 5. You know, Columbia, there we go. We're good to go.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Got to get those guys some love since they're not playing. March 23rd, a very, very important date in ACC history. And I mean, we've got some big time did you knows, right? March 23rd, we're going to go black and white photo on you. How about that? You know, when we go black and white photo, it's a big deal. But March 23rd, 1957, North Carolina wins the ACC's first men's basketball title in a legendary 3 overtime win over Kansas and Wilt Chamberlain. They finished up 32-0. Frank McGuire, how about these photos right here? By the way, nothing like seeing a Kansas photo in black and white after they lost last night by 34. Rock Chalk Jayhawk. Bill Self hitting the recruiting trail as we speak. Classic one. How about March 23rd, 1986? Why do we bring that up? This guy right here, Krzyzewski, you might have heard of him. He reached his first Final Four after Duke beat Navy by 21. Of course, an Army guy is going to beat Navy by 21. 1986.
That's an Admiral-led team, right?
Yeah, I believe that might be right. 86, sounds right.
Yeah.
Yep, no doubt about it. Yeah. Blowout. One more for you. March 23rd, 1990. 31 years ago, Dennis Scott shot in the lane, 8 seconds left, gave Georgia Tech an 81-80 win in overtime over Michigan State in the Sweet 16. How about that? Bobby Cremins taking care of business.
Yeah.
So March 23rd, some memorable days in this conference's history. Unbelievable. All right, so bottom line,
first
we got 30 seconds.
First championship is real cool.
No doubt. So you like a sweep, split, or swept this weekend? Real quick.
Can't believe I'm doing it. I guess we're going sweep. I got Florida State already in my bracket. I think Houston is overvalued. Here we go, Cuse, not being a homer. I think that's where we're going to end up.
Everybody jumping on the bandwagon. I like it. We got to get out of here. Great job, Meg, Josh, Drew, back row. From my partner, Les Durham, Dallin Cuff, Mark Packer. Folks, we'll catch you tomorrow here on ACC Network.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.